So this is actually my first year to actually be an official instructor, I guess. I was used last year and been doing things with coming to the study for some time, but last year I was asked to step into this position and this do this work and share with these great guys in being an instructor at this study. I kind of hate it because I think the reason I got this spot is because J.R. Bonger decided to step back from doing this every year. And I'm just going to make it very clear, there's no way that I can replace J.R. Bonger, okay? So it's just I'm just a new guy on the block, and we're just glad to be able to have the opportunity to be a part of this series.
But Thursday, we need to tell J.R. how good you are so that he'll...
Well, no.
And everybody, we made it clear to Rick last year that we had already decided to ask him to come on board along with JR.
Oh.
So it was not replaced.
Okay.
We were asking you no matter what.
Well, thank you very much. So it's been really exciting to be a part of this, the years that we've been a part of it, and now to get to join with doing it, being the instructor every year with the guys that we're doing it with. It's just a really good blessing to me. I appreciate it very, very much. You can tell, for some reason, the last week or so, I've been having a little bit of a throat problem. So if I'm not sounding very good or if you can't hear me very well, make sure you let me know. We'll try to turn up the volume a little bit on what I'm saying, but we'll try to do the very best we can to do this. I want to start this series of studies on communication. I want to start by just introducing it with... three or four points that I learned many years ago. I stole them from John Clark, and I've made them my own and used them forever. And I think that they're good points that are just points that are about relationships in general. So we're going to start with just making a few points like that at first here. Now, I'm not really great with the PowerPoint thing, so we'll do the best we can, and you'll see that my PowerPoints are super simple because I don't do a whole lot with them. So. But anyway, we'll do the best we can. Am I supposed to do something with this?
It's running.
Oh, okay. All right. So let me just start with some very general points about relationships. First point is that there are many relationships in life, many of which exist, most of which exist, apart from our even being Christians at all, or can exist that way. What I mean by that is the moment you and I are born, we automatically... have relationships. We have a relationship with the mama. We have a relationship with the daddy. We have a relationship with brothers and sisters. In my case, only brothers. but we have relationship with them. We have relationships with grandma and grandpa. We have relationships with uncles and aunts. We have cousins and that sort of thing that we have relationships with. We end up having relationships with people who are, you know, our neighbors and our schoolmates and all those kinds of things. And the point is that relationships, having relationships, that's just a part of being in life, a part of the human family. When you're in the human family, you end up in relationships. And what I think is important to recognize is that when I become a disciple, though, Christ regulates all of those relationships. And the reality is, let me just say this, that the reality is, even before I become make the choice to become a disciple of Christ, if I'm someone who is accountable for my actions, if I'm someone who's considered to be a mature adult, Christ regulates my life anyway. Sometimes we talk about, you know, you should accept Jesus as your Lord. Accept the Lordship of Jesus in your life, or make Jesus the Lord of your life. The reality is, guys, I can't make Jesus the Lord of my life. He already is the Lord of my life, whether I like it or not. Whether I accept it or not, whether I choose to do anything about it or not, he's still Lord in my life, and he still regulates my life. I'm responsible to his lordship in my life. But of course, when I come to the point where I decide to become a disciple of Jesus, I come to recognize that he regulates my life. I've come to learn that he regulates my life. So sometimes we ask the question, who's in charge of my life anyway? Well, the answer to that question is God. You know, we think that I'm in charge of my life. It's my body. What I do with it is my business. Not if I'm a disciple of Christ. Really, if not if I'm a person, But the reality is, as a disciple of Christ, that's certainly not the case. Because in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 19, "Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and that you are not your own? For you have been bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body." The point is that I'm not my own anymore as a disciple of Jesus. Jesus now tells me how I'm going to react. So he does that with regard to every relationship. He tells me what my relationship will be to my civil government, for example, Romans chapter 13. He'll talk to me about what my relationship and how he expects me to behave. He will regulate my relationship as a husband or as a wife, Ephesians 5 or Colossians chapter 3. He'll talk to me about my relationship as a parent. He'll regulate what I do as a parent, Ephesians 6 and verse 4. What I do as a child, certainly a child who's mature enough to be responsible for my actions, I have a responsibility to obey my parents. Jesus regulates that. If I'm an employer or an employee, Ephesians chapter 6, Christ regulates all of these relationships. He now dictates how I'm supposed to, and I respond and listen to him with regard to these relationships. And here's the important thing to recognize, and that is that a failure in a relationship is a failure with Christ. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8. "But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." You don't take care of your family as a disciple of Christ. You have denied the faith and you're worse than an unbeliever, according to Timothy. A failure in a relationship is a failure with Christ. Look at 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7. "You husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." Need I say any more? The reality is, if I don't treat my wife the way God expects me to treat her, that's not just a bad choice on my part. That's not just a kind of a casual mistake. That affects my relationship with the Lord. My prayers will be hindered if I don't treat my wife right. A failure in a relationship is a failure with Christ. One more passage with regard to our relationship with brethren. 1 John chapter 4, beginning at verse 20. "If someone says, 'I love God,' and hates his brother, he is a liar, for the one who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him, that the one who loves God should love his brother also." All of these passages are saying that not only does Christ regulate my relationships, not only must I listen to him about how I behave in the various relationships of life, but when I fail to listen to my Lord so that my relationship is suffering because I do wrong things, that's a failure with the Lord. It affects my relationship with Christ. And so we want to make sure that we're trying to live the way we ought to live in whatever relationships of life that we have, because those can affect our relationship with God. I think sometimes among us in churches of Christ, we have the impression that as long as we do the right things in church, that's good enough. And that as long as we are going to a congregation where everything is, we sing and we don't use instruments and we don't support institutions and we get all those boxes checked and we eat the Lord's Supper every first day of the week, as long as we do that, that's really all that is involved in our service to the Lord. That's not the way it is. Relationship, the reality is that my relationship with God is affected by every relationship I have. He is a part of my life. He is not a part of my life. He directs and controls my life in every area of my life. And so it matters. Relationships and how we conduct ourselves in relationships matters. It matters to God. And it matters with regard to your own relationship with God. It will affect your relationship with God if you don't behave yourself like you ought to. Now, I talk about that because I want you to recognize that we've got all sorts of relationships in life. And we want to be careful that we are conducting ourselves correctly in our various relationships. And I'm going to say to you that maybe one of the biggest problems in relationships one of the things that often causes breakdown in relationships is the failure to communicate properly. That we have a problem, we have a communication breakdown, and when we have a communication breakdown, then there's a problem. The reality is, that's true with regard to our the things affect our relationships in our homes. They affect relationships with everybody, truly, but where we see it a lot is in our homes. We have a problem with communication. In our relationships with one another as brothers, in our work in preaching sometimes, there is a communication breakdown. And the point is, we just don't communicate very well sometimes. And I'm not standing here before you to talk about this because I'm the greatest communicator. I have found in preaching, I guess some of you other guys will acknowledge this probably, I hope, I find that it's much easier to preach it than it is to live it. I can figure out what I'm supposed to do, and I can understand from Scripture what I'm supposed to do and how I'm supposed to live, and I can get up and talk about that, and sometimes I can actually talk about that right rather effectively, but I don't always live up to it the way I'm supposed to. Okay, practicing what I preach is sometimes the difficulty. And so when I come to you to talk to you about communication and being effective with our communication and trying to help us communicate with one another in a better way, I don't come to you as some sort of expert on communication, okay? I'm just trying to share with you some biblical principles that I've learned, things that I've tried to, in my own life, to try to help me be a better communicator, and things that I think we're going to maybe hopefully help us, all of us. And I hope to talk about things over the week that are going to be very, very practical, okay? That are going to be things that we need to actually implement and do to help us. So I want to talk to you this week then about effective communication. And I want to start by saying that real and meaningful communication requires the active participation of two parties, both a sender and a receiver. Now, I want to make this point because far too often I'm afraid that we think about communication from a one-sided perspective, from that of the perspective of sending information. We think that the quality of communication is dependent on the quality of the speaker, the quality of the one who's saying or sending the information. And if we have a problem with communication, it's because the guy who is sending the information is not doing a good job of that. Now, I will tell you this, that there's a lot of things that we need to do on that side of the story, on that side of the perspective. But I want us to understand that there's another side of the story too. Despite how well we may send information or information is sent, if the receiver does not receive that information just as well, communication will not occur. Real and meaningful communication will not occur. We've got to have a good sender, and we've got to have an active participant as a sender, and we've got to have an active participant as a receiver. I think that the mistake we sometimes make is in assuming that receiving information or listening is passive, that it's something that just sort of happens to us, kind of like receiving a slap in the face. You don't do anything to get slapped, or maybe you did something that provoked it, I don't know. But my point is, you don't have to do anything to complete the activity of a slap in the face. That's just something that happens to you. But I would suggest to you that real and meaningful communication requires both quality sending and quality receiving, and it's very much like pitching and catching in the game of baseball. I read a book years ago that turned me on to this illustration. It was a book called, I think it was by J. Mortimer Adler, or Mortimer J. Adler, I can't remember if the J comes first or in the middle. But he wrote a book called How to Read a Book. And he talked about this, used this kind of an illustration, that communication, in order for it to be effective communication, needing both a sender and receiver, that it's very much like pitching and catching in the game of baseball. Now, when I was in high school, I played baseball. I was not as muscular as I am now. And so, it might have been a little difficult to recognize, but I was a catcher in baseball. And I want to just think with you for a minute about this kind of a picture. If you can imagine a pitcher who gets out on the mound, and you've got a pitcher who is so good that he throws a strike every single time. If you have a catcher behind the plate who cannot catch the ball, will you have outs? You won't have outs, will you? Why? Drop third strike, batter can advance to the first base. That's right. It's exactly right. And so in order to get outs, in order to complete the play effectively, the catcher has to catch the ball. I said I was a catcher in high school. I live in a little town of Trenton, Florida, in Gilchrist County, a little place in central Florida. And yeah, we grew up in the same area, Tucker and I, or at least we were, my senior years were there. And they had the little Gilchrist County paper, and they always would report, you know, the stats of the game. And guess who always got the most putouts in the paper? It was the catcher. Not the pitcher? Well, no, not the pitcher, because in order for the person to be put out, I had to catch the ball. And I want you to understand that that's a very good illustration of the way communication works and helps us understand catching is not passive. Catching is an activity. If you can imagine that the pitcher is the sender of the information, that the ball is the information, and the catcher is the receiver of the information, in order to have, in the game of baseball, in order for that to be effective, you've got to have a guy who pitches the ball well, the ball's got to go right, and it's got to catch, the guy who's got to catch, the catcher's got to catch the ball. And the point then is that catching is as much an active position. Trust me, I've played many ball games in baseball, and it's very hard work being a catcher. Catching is as much an activity as is pitching. And the same thing is true with listening. Listening is as much an activity, and much is it doesn't just happen. It's something that someone has to be actively listening in order for communication to occur. And so that brings me to the number one. Well, let me say this. We emphasize this idea of listening because I think one of the maybe the number one problem in the field of communication is that people don't really listen very well, if they listen at all. People don't catch well, okay? We don't receive accurately. We often ignore when we're supposed to be listening. Or we pretend to listen. Or we practice selective hearing or selective listening, and that's especially so in conflicts and in confrontation. How many of us have ever been guilty of some of those things? I have all of those things. There have been times that I've ignored my sweet woman when she's talking to me. There are some times that it occurs that I pretend to listen, but I'm thinking something else. Men folk are a little bit different than women. Women have the ability to do multiple things at once. I am a man who has, you know, there's a book that was written years ago about women are spaghetti and men are waffles or something like that. And that's because men kind of are in the little blocks, and I'm in the little block. I'm just the one kind of, I can just do one thing at a time, technically, especially mentally. And in fact, I actually have a block where there's nothing in that block. I can have moments where I'm sitting there and I'm not thinking of anything, okay? But the point is, I look like I'm listening, you know? I'm pretending to listen, but I'm not really listening. And very often when we talk about listening, because we sort of think it happens, we don't realize that it's an active position. We sometimes only ignore, or we pretend to listen, or we really practice selective hearing. That especially happens in conflict. We only hear the part that we wanted to hear. And that's a problem. And even worse sometimes, when we are, quote-unquote, listening attentively, we're actually listening with the intent to reply. In other words, while we're listening, we're catching pieces of information that are coming to us, and we're already beginning to think about how we're going to respond, even before we have let that person completely communicate to us what they're trying to say. And that becomes a real problem. And so what we do is we listen with the intent to reply instead of listening with the intent to understand. And that can really break down communication. And so that brings me to the number one piece of, or one of the best pieces of advice that I can give you with regard to communication. And it's straight out of Stephen Covey's book on Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. It's the idea is to seek first to understand and then to be understood. Think about that. Seek first to understand and then to be understood. And so what I want to do in this lesson, this particular lesson today, is I want to spend the rest of our time focusing on our catching. I want to focus on our listening and talk to us a little bit about how we can be more effective in the area of listening. So now let me move to the first rule of good communication. If this advice is seek first to understand and then to be understood, let me say that the first rule of good communication is listen with the intent to understand. We have to listen with the intention of understanding. That's a biblical principle. Go to James chapter 1, verse 19. James chapter 1 and verse 19. And listen, if there's somewhere along the way that you just got to say something, go ahead and put your hand up. I might call on you, I might not, but we'll see. Maybe toward the end of this we can talk a little bit more about some of these things, maybe a little bit better. But in James chapter 1 and verse 19, James says this, "This you know, my beloved brothers or brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger, for the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God." Let me start out by saying, when we read that verse, we understand what it says, but we typically end up getting it exactly backwards. Instead of being quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, we are slow to hear, quick to speak, and sometimes even quicker to anger. And you need to understand that's a big deal because, as he goes on to say, the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. You want to have the righteousness that God wants you to have. You can't have that if you're angry, and it's very often the problem that brings anger is the fact that we're quick to anger. And we're quick to speak, and we haven't listened like we should. So notice what the text says here. It says that we're supposed to be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Let me just say that that doesn't simply mean, when James says be quick to hear, he's not saying what that means is that you stand quietly by and let the other person speak first. It's much more than that. It's more than just being polite and letting the other guy speak first. Being swift to hear involves listening, really listening, with the intent to understand, so that when we do respond, we can respond in a wise and informed and proper way. There's an Old Testament text in Proverbs chapter 18, verse 13 that says, "He who gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame to him." And that's what we sometimes do. Far too often, we respond to situations before we truly understand. I know, we think we understand. We think we understand. But we don't really understand yet because we haven't really taken the time to listen. We think we understand, we respond to what we think the person is saying, we respond to what we think the situation is, and we do that a lot in a lot of our relationships. We do that with our wives. We come home, and we've had a hard day, and we walk into the house, and there our wife is standing, still in her pajamas. Her hair is messed up. She looks unkempt, and we go, what have you been you haven't been doing anything today? Just been sitting around? And what we don't know is that when she got up, there were problems with the kids. One of the kids had gotten sick, and she had to clean up the mess that the kid made. Then she went to try to fix breakfast, found out that the stove isn't working, had to call a stove repairman in, and just all sorts of things have happened that made her day so terrible. But we have responded to what we think is the situation, but we don't really do it. How many of us have made that mistake with our kids? Thank you. How many of us have walked into a room just in time to see sister haul off and slap brother? Lots of times. And we run in there, and what we do is we pick up sister and we paddle her bottom. And then we find out, when we take the time to listen, after we've already administered punishment, we find out that, yeah, the reason she hit her brother was because he pinched the fire out of her, and look at the mark he left, you know. And we haven't taken the time to figure that out. If we had stopped a moment to listen and to try to figure out what the situation really is, then that would have maybe made a big difference in the way we responded. And the point is that when we respond, but we don't yet truly understand, since we've not taken the time to really listen, we respond anyway, we end up with a disaster. Tempers flare, feelings get hurt, communication ends, and the relationship is damaged. Sometimes it's even broken. That happens at times. We've got to learn to be swift to hear and slow to speak. We've got to learn to listen so that we can truly understand and then respond, and we'll never do that. We'll never do that if we're only pretending to listen, or if we are practicing selective hearing, or if we're listening with the intent to respond. We've got to learn to listen with the specific intent to understand. And guys, that's a choice. That's a choice. You have to, if you're going to listen with the intention to understand, you're going to have to choose to listen with the intent to understand. Now, this is critical, I think, in the family. It's critical in the church. And critical, really, in most relationships, all relationships, really. We're all, and part of the reason is because we're all different in how we think. We see things differently. We come to situations with a different kind of backdrop, with a different kind of circumstance, and that backdrop oftentimes affects the way we're looking at a situation. Okay? And I want to try to illustrate that with a little exercise here. So we've got a nice little place right here where we can kind of cut us in half. And so what I'm going to do here in just a minute is I'm going to ask everybody on this side of the room to just close your eyes. And I'm going to show everybody on this side of the room a picture. And then I'm going to ask them to close their eyes, and I'm going to show you guys a picture, the ones on this side. And what I want you to do is I want the picture that I show you to represent your backdrop, the perspective from which you're coming toward a problem. And then I'm going to show you a third picture, which is going to represent the problem. And we're going to see who has it right, what the problem really is, okay? So for a moment, everybody on this side, please, of course, cooperate with me. And by the way, if you've seen this done before, act like you don't know what's happening so that my bubble isn't busted. But everybody on this side, I want you to just kind of keep your eyes closed, and I'm going to show you guys a picture, okay? So you guys ready? Here we go. Everybody closed on the my right side. Here we go. Okay, good enough. Everybody on the this side, you guys can open your eyes. You guys over here, please close your eyes for a minute. I want to show you a picture here. Okay. You can all open your eyes now. Now, you both have your own backdrop. The picture that you see represents the back, your backdrop. This, and now we're going to come to a problem or a situation. And I'm going to show you the situation, and this is the thing that this is the real problem that we're actually, this is the actual thing, the problem that we're looking at. So everybody look at this. Okay. What's the problem? How many of us see the problem as being an Eskimo in front of a cave? Huh? Don't overthink this, okay? This is a simple illustration. So how many of us think the problem is an Eskimo in front of a cave? Okay, okay. So that's what you guys think it is? What do you think the problem is? An Indian. An Indian? That's what you saw? Okay, well. Okay, so some of us are good and see both things. But here's what I showed the first guys. Here's what I showed the second set of people. And here's what the problem actually is. So what is the problem? Is the problem an Eskimo in front of the cave, or is the problem an Indian head? Who's right? These guys, who saw the Eskimo in front of the cave? You guys first? Okay. And you guys saw these guys are saying, it's an Indian head. Can't you see that? Are you stupid? Are you blind? You guys are saying, no, it's not. It's an Eskimo in front of the cave. And they're going, what? An Eskimo in front of the cave? And that's what happens sometimes when we have issues with one another. We come to those issues with different perspectives. And that those perspectives, those backdrops, affect the way we're looking at the situation. And then we respond on the basis of what we think the situation is, but because we haven't taken the time to listen to the other person's perspective and see things from their side of the coin, we end up now seeing the problem differently. And what if you start prescribing solutions to the problem without seeing the other person's side of the perspective, the side of the situation? Well, we end up with lots of problems. We end up with lots of disagreement. We have disaster. And that occurs in a family. That occurs sometimes in a church. The church is looking at this problem, or your wife is looking at this problem, but she has you have the Indian head in your mind, and she has the Eskimo in hers. And you can't see why she's seeing an Eskimo in front of the cave here. But there is an Eskimo in front of the cave, isn't there? See the problem? See what the situation is? And the point is, when we don't have a proper understanding of the other person because we see things differently, we start providing solutions without really figuring out what the other person is actually seeing or actually is trying to communicate to us. You know, when they take the time to say, no, hang on, see, let me show you how it's an Eskimo in front of the cave, and they begin to be more careful, and you take the time to listen to it, you may still see an Indian head, but at least now you can sort of see, okay, I understand why you're saying there's an Eskimo in front of the cave. And that makes it more possible for you to reach some kind of agreement. It doesn't necessarily mean just because you finally recognize and understand the other person's perspective, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily right about the issue. But at least now, because you understand their perspective, you can really address the things that you're having a difference about. When you get ready to speak, you can speak from a more understanding perspective because you really understood what the other person has said. And what that sometimes requires is what we sometimes call a paradigm shift. We have to suddenly look at things from a different perspective. I was on a train once, an L train in Chicago. I'd been preaching and teaching, having some classes on one in one spot, and I took an L train to another place where I was supposed to be. And it was later in the day, and I was tired, and I was basically pretty much finishing, because I was going back to where I started from. And I was on the L train, and everybody was kind of minding their own business, doing their own thing. And we stopped at one stop, and this guy gets on the train, and he got two kids. And immediately it was clear that these kids were rowdy, okay? And the kids are kind of running up and down the aisles, and some of them, you know, sometimes they're climbing on things. And they're knocking over, they knocked over one guy's briefcase and were ruffling people's newspapers. I'll tell you how long ago it was that it happened. Ruffling people's newspapers and things like that. And the dad is sitting there, and he's just zoned out. And you're thinking, why isn't he doing something about these kids? Doesn't he see the problem that his kids are creating on the train here? Doesn't he see that? Somebody needs to help him understand. He needs to get his kids under control. They're going to hurt somebody or hurt themselves if they're not careful. So, being the big mouth that I am, I said to him, I said, sir, excuse me, but do you not see what your children are doing? Do you not see how out of control your kids are? I mean, they're running up and down the aisles. They're bumping into people. Everybody's disturbed by that. We're all getting kind of frustrated, and you're sitting here doing nothing. What about that, sir? And he said to me, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I wasn't kind of out of it. He said, I've just come from the hospital, and my wife has passed away. And I'm trying to think about how I'm going to respond, how I'm going to tell my kids that their mother's not coming home. You think that we all had a paradigm shift all of a sudden? Suddenly that changed everything because we understood his backdrop. Now everybody is kind of helping out. Some of the people are kind of playing some games with some of the kids. Some of the people are patting the guy, helping, comforting the guy. And the point is, we're all acting differently now. We're not disturbed now. We're very understanding now because we understand the man's situation. And that's often what has to happen, is sometimes when we take the time to see the other person's perspective, it makes a big difference. It makes a difference in the way we're responding. And just so you know, that didn't actually happen. Just made the story up. But had some help with it, but I made the story up. So anyway, but it does illustrate something, doesn't it? It really does illustrate that. That need for a change of understanding or a shift in the way we're thinking if we're going to understand. And so, of course, what I'm trying to help us recognize is that this requires us to take the time to listen with the intent to understand. And that is a choice. And it takes some patient effort on my part to take the time to really listen and understand what's going on before I respond. And I'm just going to say to you that parents who respond to their children before they listen enough to know the real facts, they're going to end up punishing unfairly. They're going to end up spanking sister when it was really little brother that was the problem. Okay? People who do that with their spouses, who won't listen and try to figure out their spouse's perspective, they're going to disagree. They're hopelessly lost in disagreement because they don't really see the other person's perspective, and they're going to fight, or worse, they're going to break the relationship. Elders who respond before understanding, who won't listen to the congregation, who is not interested in hearing from the group, those elders are poor elders, just my judgment about that. And they're not going to be able to lead the church the right way, and they're going to end up hurting the church. I'm not saying that elders need to listen to the church and just bow to their every whim and end up doing what the people want when they're not wanting what's right. But they need to listen to their members so that they understand. And then maybe once they understand and have taken the time to patiently listen, maybe then the group will be more open to their leadership because they've listened. They care about what the members are thinking. And I will say to you also that it can happen with members of the church, with each other. Sometimes there's a disagreement between people. And we think we know, the one person thinks they know what the other person is talking about, and it's just not right, and they just get upset with one another. And the point is that it's going to hurt the church. It's going to hurt their relationships with them. And I want you to understand that I think this can happen with us as preachers when we preach. This kind of thing can happen. We can, and sometimes we often do, make the mistake of not listening well and responding to situations in our work before we rightly understand them. And in fact, I know of a situation in Wisconsin with a congregation where there was a preacher that was there working with them. There were many good things about this preacher. There were some things about him that were a little difficult. But they were having some difficulty with this preacher. And so the church got together to try to resolve, talk about their differences and resolve those differences. And this was, again, I age myself sometimes, or I tell them my age, but this was back in the day of the transparencies. And there would be a member of the church, I mean, I know this was going on, there would be a member of the church who would be trying to explain their perspective on the problem, trying to help the preacher understand what they thought was the problem. And the whole time that person is talking to him, he's looking through his transparencies, trying to find the transparency that's going to answer the argument that the person is making. And he may have been right, but I'll tell you what, he blew his relationship with those people because even though he was acting like, appearing to give them the opportunity to speak, he clearly already thought he understood what they meant before they even expressed themselves. And maybe they were wrong. But when you do that to someone, they're not very likely to listen to your response. They're not likely to hear your response very objectively because, after all, you really didn't take the time to hear and understand the point that they were trying to make. And I'm just saying that there are all sorts of ways that that happens with us in preaching and our relationship with congregations and that sort of thing. So I would tell you that if you do that kind of thing, it's going to hurt you. It's going to hurt us if we do that kind of thing. It's going to hurt our ability to positively influence those who are trying to persuade with the gospel. It's going to hurt our ability to positively influence those who are trying to direct them in the path of right. It's going to affect those relationships. And I think we have to recognize then that you can't accurately respond until you understand. And so what I want to encourage you to do is to spend some time practicing your catching. Learn to listen well. It doesn't just mean be polite and be quiet and let the other person speak. It means try to understand. It may mean that anything you say is a question for clarification. You might be trying to say, is this what you're saying, or that sort of thing, but the point is, you are clearly listening with the intent to understand. We must learn how to do that first well. I'm not talking about your pitching yet. I'm going to talk about pitching tomorrow. But I want you to think carefully about this idea of listening. Let me just ask you then, let me make this, ask you a personal question. How are you doing at catching? Again, we're not talking about your pitching yet. I want to know how you're doing at catching. How are you doing at listening to those who are trying to communicate with you, those with whom you are interacting? How are you doing at that, first of all, in your home? How well your relationships go at home, I believe, will affect, or at least can affect, your relationship with the Lord, and it can also have a profound effect on your relationship with the congregation that you're working with. Poor relationships with your wife and your children can affect how effective you are as a preacher. So, are you someone who's really catching well? Are you catching well at home with your wife and with your kids? Here's the question. Would your wife and kids say that you're a good listener? It's easy for you to think that you're a good listener. I think I'm a good listener. But sometimes it happens that I find out that, lo and behold, this person, I have not listened well to this person. They've recognized that I've not been a good listener. My wife, in the situation with her, sometimes that can happen with my kids. So the question is, how well does your wife and kids think you are? How good of a catcher do they think you are? Do you listen well to them? And then next, how are you doing at catching or listening in your relationships with your brothers in Christ, with the folks that you work with in the local congregation where you're preaching? Would they say that you're a good listener? Again, we're not asking about your pitching right now. They may think you're a fantastic speaker, but the question is, would they think that you're good at listening? For now, I want you to encourage you to concentrate on your catching. I want you to listen, learn to listen with the specific intent to understand. Try to get in your head that that's what I've got to do and start practicing that. And remember that listening with the intent to understand is a choice. You choose to do that. Let me just say this, that you're not ready to step out on the mound and pitch, start pitching, until you first caught the ball. So that's what I had to say. I was given an hour and a half, and evidently, I asked for it. It's got to be that way, because Ken wouldn't jerk my chain about it. But I don't remember asking for an hour and a half period of time. I did this perfect, this was, huh? What? It was a communication problem. Yeah. This would have been perfect timing for, had I just had an hour session. Is there any question or discussion or something that somebody wants to ask about or make an observation about?
You know, it's interesting. You know, I made the observation. I saw the Indian. Yeah. I thought that was interesting. Again, not trying to.
Don't ruin my illustration.
Yeah, not trying to. But you know what's interesting is until we stood up and stared at it, I didn't see the Eskimo the second time.
Uh-huh.
So you got another dynamic,
right,
you know, in there as far as the communication of both sides of, right, the picture.
Right.
You know, it's possible that you see something.
And I really think that picture illustration illustrates what happens with us. We really do think that the problem is an Indian. But actually, there's an Eskimo in front of the cave there. And that could be actually what the problem is. And we just haven't seen it because we haven't looked at the other person's perspective. Yes, sir?
To your point about it's easy to think that we're good listeners, but we're not really. I was on the phone with someone a few years ago who is a brother in Christ, and we were having a difficult conversation, and I was getting the impression that he wasn't listening very well. He just wanted to talk and talk and talk and talk. And I think there's some truth in the fact that he wasn't listening. But I also wasn't listening very well either. And
right.
I was thinking to myself, I just want to get, you know, a word in edgewise and tell him what I'm thinking. Right. But I had to take the first step and listen, right, and understand what he was saying first.
And let me just be honest with you guys, as preachers, we sort of have the gift of the gab a little bit.
Really?
And we can dominate the conversation. We can be people who are talking, and we're never giving the other person a time, a chance to speak. We're not even giving them the opportunity to let us learn to listen, because we're just talking all the time. And that can be a problem. I think that what we need to think about when it comes to our relationships, and we're coming to some situation where we're having a conversation with somebody, do your best to put yourself in the position of the catcher first. Do your best to be in the position of listening, and listen with the intent to understand. Somebody's got to do it. And oftentimes, the other person that you're talking to hasn't heard Rick Ligon speak on this subject yet. So they haven't learned. No, but I mean, sometimes the person that you're talking to doesn't know about being a good listener. So take the time to understand. And I'll tell you, that'll do worlds with regard to your relationship to the person, because they recognize this guy really cares. He really is interested in what I have to say. And then maybe you can respond, you know, once you really understand, you can respond in a better way. Yes, sir?
I think it's also interesting that James includes slow to wrath.
Yes.
You have to be slow to speak, swift to hear, slow to speak. But also, once you accurately understand what they're trying to communicate, you also have to wrestle with how that made you feel,
right,
and respond in an appropriate manner.
Right. Absolutely. Yes, sir?
I can be a good listener, and my wife knows that I can be. And so when I'm not, and she knows what I could be,
real frustration.
Is extra frustration.
Yeah, because she knows you can do this.
Yep.
You did it just the other day, but now you're not listening to me. Good. Anybody else got a comment? Yes, sir.
I think another thing to realize is that being a good listener doesn't mean you have to
No.
With the other. It's not like you have to always say, "Oh, you're right. I agree with you."
Right.
No, it's not good listening.
What listening may be, okay, now I understand what you're saying. Okay, now I see what you're saying. Now let me formulate a response to that. Let me think about how I want to respond to that. But the point is, you know, yeah, many times you are right in the way you see it. But you're having this argument, this person really thinks they're right, and it would help you to help them if you took the time to figure out why they think they're right about it. And so, yeah, listening well and with the intent to understand does not mean that you end up necessarily agreeing with the person.
You know, Rick, use the baseball illustration.
Mm-hmm.
The pitcher doesn't pitch until the catcher
gives the signal.
So you're paying attention, and then you pitch. So,
right.
So you learn to catch.
Right.
And then you give the signal, and then you pitch.
Right. And if the pitcher's listening to the signal, then you know what to expect when he throws the ball at you.
Yeah.
It's going to be a curve ball or change up or whatever. Yeah. Yes, sir?
From the pitching end and the receiving end, catching end, sometimes it gets really complicated. And sometimes the difference between men and women think when you start out, is, you know, I've asked my wife, can you give me some kind of hint where we're going with this?
Right.
Because she, and, you know, part of the time, I'm trying to think it through. So if she's going here and there, and I'll ask her a question, she thinks I'm not listening. But I'm trying to follow.
Right.
But sometimes she doesn't even know exactly until she's worked through it.
Right.
I have not always been patient. Sometimes I need some duct tape.
Yeah. That's a good thing to have. duct tape is a good thing to have on hand. That's true. Yeah, that's true. But, you know, the reality is that women are different than men. I know that God is right, okay? So I'm not questioning God's command to treat my wife in an understanding way. But women don't think like men. Understanding a woman is pretty hard thing to do. That's why you have to study her, which means you have to take the time to listen to your wife and figure out things. But they have a different way of thought process. There's an old song, an old country song that I often use to illustrate this. I can't remember the name of the song. But it's a gal who's singing about rain, and she ends up thinking about her sweetheart. And the logic, it just floors me. But the logic is this, and I have to do it in the Southern because it's a Southern song. So when I think about rain, I think about singing. When I think about singing, it's a heavenly tune. When I think about heaven, I think about angels. When I think about angels, I think about you. And women, when they hear that, they go, oh, yeah, that just... And us guys are going, huh? You started at rain and ended up with your honey? I don't get it, you know? That thought process, that line of logic, is just doesn't compute for us. But we gotta if we're going to understand our wives, we got to figure out how she gets to where she is. And that takes listening. So really, that's the big thing. Yes, sir?
I think it's great that you mentioned that point, that we have to stop and take time, because like me, having ADHD, I'm 5 steps ahead.
Yeah.
I've already tried to come to the conclusion before it ever even happened.
Right.
You know, and that's so important. There's been a lot of arguments that's been stopped if I just stop and listen.
Right.
Rather than try to...
And how many times have you not actually heard what your wife said, and you were responding on that, and then you find out she was saying something completely... Sometimes Candy has a different tone. Let me tell you something. It's hard being married to Candy. It's wonderful being married to Candy, but she's always right. It bugs the living daylights out of me, because even when I think I really got her, I find out that I'm actually wrong. She's really right. But anyway, but, you know, there are sometimes... we don't actually hear each other as well as we should. And that's especially a problem now that we're both getting older, because we really don't hear well, you know. And, of course, the issue is, you know, Rick, you're standing around the corner and you're trying to say something to me, and I'm in the kitchen here washing, the water's running in the sink here, and what, you expect me to hear you over all of that? And then when I'm standing in front of the sink and she's around the corner, she comes around and says, "You are so deaf." And she's probably right. But the point is that we don't, you know, a lot of times we think we've heard what she said, but we sometimes it's literally that we didn't actually hear her words correctly. And so we have to think about that.
Costco's got really good hearing aids.
Do they? Ah, don't know. Okay. Any other comments? I'm sorry that I'm finishing. For those of you who don't know me, I am known as the sorriest preacher in the Brotherhood, because I apologize so much and I get in trouble. And Candy specifically told me not one apology today. So I don't apologize. What did you say?
Let me take that back.
So I don't apologize, but we are finished early. So that makes me, I guess, a favorite. You're going to have a little extra break time. So, unless there was something else. Okay, let's take a break until...